How are you, my friend?
I'm well.
I'm glad to hear it.
Very well. I'm happy to feel it getting a little warmer. See it getting warmer.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. That's a good clarification.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, because it dipped a little cool for me. Did it? Being spring. Yeah.
Yeah. Those days in Minnesota. Minnesota.
Yeah.
They're,
Minnesota. Well, for me, it was the cold is one thing, but the fact that the plants all started to kind of bud and bloom and little tiny leaves that look like they wouldn't hurt a fly, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like just little guys that, and you're like, brace yourselves.
Yeah.
It's going to get cold.
Yeah.
But I don't think it got below freezing, which is...
I didn't notice it did. Not like a couple weekends ago when I got 27 or so. Yeah.
Welcome to How I See It with me, Mark Pratt, and
Justin Sternberg. This is a podcast that works to counter cultural polarization through thoughtful conversations.
So your plants are okay?
They are okay.
So all is well.
Yes. Good. Mowed the lawn for the first time. First time this year, this weekend. So.
Wow.
Good weekend.
Yeah. Little lightning storm starting to green things up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
How was your weekend?
It was good. It was busy, but good.
What did you do Sunday?
What did I do Sunday?
Sunday afternoon around 3 p.m.
You know what? I had a wonderful afternoon on Sunday with you folks and my wife recording a podcast.
That's right. That was fun.
That was fun.
It was our first guest podcast.
Yes.
And we thought it was fitting, right, to...
Yeah.
To have our wives on.
Just have that glimpse. Yeah, and it was good. It was good.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to try and edit it, because it'll be my first time trying to combine two feeds of audio into one.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm no pro at this thing. It's just, as you've seen, I just drop a few clips. Like, this is all... a learning curve, but it'll be interesting.
Our audience will not be surprised that we went over a 60-minute time frame.
That's
probably,
right.
You know, so that's the need for the editing, is we just went over our
typical time frame.
Our allotted time, and it kicked us off, and we had to restart again.
Yeah. That's right. So it turns out there's a 30-minute time limit if you record from the website.
Yep.
Anchor website. And there's an hour time limit if you record from the Anchor app. So now we know both of those things.
That's
which is really, really good.
Exactly. It's good to know.
It is good to know.
Unfortunately, we found out the hard way both times.
That's what we like to do, Mark. This is how we do it. This is how we see it.
Yeah. This is how we talk it.
Yeah.
Too long sometimes.
Too long. It's actually, it'd be interesting to hear if anyone's out there, tap, tap. You know, what they think about in terms of longer episodes once in a while.
Mm.
Like guests, because I have a hunch that guest episodes will be longer. Well, at least the recorded bit will be longer. Partly because I think it will be difficult to rein a conversation between three people or four people or whatever into that 40-minute slot. But also, I wouldn't necessarily want to do that, because there might be some good stuff that squeaks out at the end or in the beginning or whatever.
Once you find your rhythm stuff.
Yeah.
I think that was kind of what I noticed on Sunday, you know, as the ladies were in here with us, you know, it's foreign.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it doesn't take long and you find a rhythm, you know, and everybody starts kind of opening up in their, you know, in their verbalization as well as their, you know, body posture, you know,
it's like... Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting to observe.
It felt like when we started.
Yeah?
Like we were, you know, forcing them to do.
Oh, yeah.
There's kind of this, like, what are you making me do?
Yes. We're here because we love you, and that's the only reason.
Exactly. Which we appreciate.
Oh, yes, very much so.
But I do feel like by the end, it was like, we probably need to stop sometime soon, ladies. it was good. They were willing to chat, and it was great to have them. So
it was, and it was fun. As we talked about future episodes and, you know, just kind of that vision type dynamic that was fun to be able to do and have their input. And, yeah. So it's interesting because even as we talked about the possibility of this week, there was definitely some intrigue. You wanna introduce Mr. Chesterton?
Chesterton. As in
GK
Chesterton, right?
Yes.
So yeah, he was an author. Mm-hmm. How much do you know about him?
Very little. I read some stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'll let you go ahead. I mean, there's a lot of correlation with my profession based on his thoughts, but like you say, I can come to those later.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So he wrote a ton of stuff, but one thing that he wrote was just some quote about a fence. And so someone wrote this article talking about Chesterton's fence. Mm-hmm. And I'll just, if you don't mind, I'll read this little quote by him in this article. G.K. Chesterton says, "There exists in such a case a certain institution or law, let us say for the sake of simplicity, a fence or gate erected across a road. The more modern type of reformer goes gaily up to it and says, 'I don't see the use of this, let us clear it away.' To which the more intelligent type of reformer will do well to answer, 'If you don't see the use of it, I certainly won't let you clear it away. Go away and think. Then when you can come back and then when you can come back and tell me that you do see the use of it, I may allow you to destroy it." Mm. That's some funky language there.
Yeah.
What's your take on that, Mark? Your first thoughts?
Well, I have a good few. I was taken by the fact of his ability to use the fence to represent what he shared about an institution or law. So I think in our enlightened or evolved perspectives, sometimes we can think those things that came before us are antiquated, outdated. There's no need for them. So our tendency at times is to just do away with it because of that elevated, I'll call it arrogant even at times, thinking that wants to do away with things just for the sake of avoiding restraint.
That's
in a nutshell.
Yeah.
What it said. And I think, you know, I'll even bring it back because I'm not trying to steal it from you, but you know, he does a nice job of this, you know, first order thinking and second order thinking. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, for me as a therapist, that's
so go ahead. Pause right there as a therapist.
Yep.
The article that we're referencing is on a blog called Barnum Street Blog, where they talk a lot about mental models and various things. And this particular article, you know, it's Chesterton's Fence, a lesson in second order thinking. And so the article is talking about this idea of second order thinking.
Yeah.
Versus G.K. Chesterton didn't write all this stuff. It's mostly about his one little paragraph, and they've expounded this article. I wanted to clear that up real quick, but as you talk about.
No, and go ahead as you see. I'm going to flip it back to you even as you
Well, don't forget the as a therapist.
I will. I have that. No problem. We're good there. even in that. How do you see, what difference do you see as you read the article on the difference between first order thinking and second order thinking? And it's okay if you need a moment to kind of scroll, but I mean, am I putting you on the spot too much right there?
Yeah, I'm actually looking at, I wanted to see the exact thing that had here. And if you don't mind.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Second order thinking is the practice of not just considering the consequences of our decisions, but also the consequences of those consequences. Everyone can manage first order thinking, which is just considering the immediate anticipated result of an action. And let's be honest, Mark, not everyone does that even.
No,
right?
Like, but, that's true.
It's simple and quick, usually requiring little effort. By comparison, second-order thinking is more complex and time-consuming. The fact that it is difficult and unusual is what makes the ability to do it such a powerful advantage. Yeah, he said second-order thinking will get you extraordinary results.
There you go.
And so will learning to recognize when other people are using that second-order thinking, to which they talk about G.K. Chesterton's comments.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, what do I... I thought that would say it better than what I could say. But essentially, it's this idea that I could do a thing in anticipation with of what kind of consequences or, you know, every action has an equal and opposite reaction, right? Like, sure. I can anticipate what that bounce back might look like or whatever. But thinking about what that bounce back might cause, right? Like, and then, and then that after that and after that, you know, that kind of thinking it through into the future as far as you can, I think can often, you know, like you said, produce much better results. It can be the difference between having a solid relationship with someone at work or them feeling like you're always trying to get ahead. It can be the difference between, you know, getting what you want out of your kids. They're obedient. They do what you say, but maybe they fly the coop, so to speak, right?
Sure.
And they, because you get what you want in the short term, but you're missing that second order of consequences, right? Of like, I can demand that they do what I say. I can enforce this thing, but I can't change their heart, and I can't cause them to understand the reason for that. And so second order thinking says, well, I can get my way now, or I can, you know, I guess compromise or whatever, figure out how to communicate this in a way that can deal with those second order consequences.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. So,
those are just some of my thoughts off the cuff, since I didn't
know. No. And that's, and I think, and I'll come back to that as a therapist, you know, I mean, and I see them as fairly similar, but you know, we're in my world, we're looking at change. So quite often we'll refer to first order change and second order change. And I think in some ways it's kind of similar. Because first order change is typically, okay, if I don't quit this, my wife is going to leave. You follow me? So there's some kind of pressure. It's a singular, you know, dynamic. If I don't quit gambling, let's say, you know, my wife's had it. If I don't stop this, there's this singular pressure that may happen. There's this one consequence. So even for the sake of that one consequence, I may change. But if my addiction is greater than that impetus for change, I may just say, well, I prefer gambling to being married. You follow me? And so that would be the first order change that didn't happen. But second order change is that process where I'm able to establish. So I see maybe that first order change, but then I go into the second order where I'm able to recognize, oh my goodness, I didn't realize how gambling was affecting my personal finances. I actually have a savings account now because I quit gambling. And now I'm feeling more confident in my ability to make decisions. And I'm not as short with my children because I don't have this stress and this pressure. It multiplies because I start to see the benefits of this change, and it becomes more lasting because there's greater benefit to it. Does that make sense perspective?
It makes perfect sense. And you also made me think about, too, when you're only working towards or thinking about that first order, what do you say, consequence, first order?
Change. Yes.
And you achieve that first order change, the motivation might stop, right?
Like, yes.
I think this may be what you're getting at too, but, or vice versa, like you remove that one singular obstacle, like maybe your wife leaves. Well, okay.
Yeah.
That I was trying to work towards that not happening, but that's not a thing anymore. So I guess gambling is okay now, right? Or whatever, you know. So again, like having that one singular order of change can be problematic in that it might not stick. And we've certainly seen that, you know, probably in counseling, you've probably seen that. I know I've seen that in people's stories and in real life in a lot of ways at Celebrate Recovery, of just like once that one singular point of pain disappeared or they addressed it, right? Like they did the thing they were supposed to do. It often wasn't enough to maintain that change because, you know,
yeah,
the further things weren't recognized or realized or valued.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that I see the two as very similar.
Mm-hmm.
So when that first order changed, that pressure may not necessarily be enough. And I think when we're thinking when we're doing first order thinking, I think it's similar. We're just making a decision based on a current comfort in the moment. Mm-hmm. I don't like this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want this restraint. I don't want. And so I think of that, you know, in our cultural dynamic and say, I don't want that. And yet I'm not sure we always go to that second order thinking mm-hmm. and saying, okay, if I do away with that, what else might happen?
Mm-hmm.
So I see your gears kind of thinking based on mm-hmm. what I said. What comes to mind for you when I think about that? Or is there a way you see that?
Well, one thing I was thinking about is what happened. I guess this is my question. How many times has a fence been torn up only to be put back up?
Mm.
Right? To recognize, like, I didn't want this fence. It's in my way. Can't get my truck through. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Take it down. Oh, you know, the coyotes are getting my chickens or whatever. We should put that fence back up, right?
Yeah.
And recognizing that the inconvenience was worth it for what the benefit of that thing was. And I think that's why he's saying, like, until you can go away and figure out why that thing exists, well, then you certainly shouldn't tear it down. Because you don't know what the trade-offs are. You don't know what the pros and cons are yet, you know?
Yeah.
And I do like one quote in there. It says, Chesterton also alluded to the all-too-common belief that previous generations were bumbling fools, stumbling around constructing fences wherever they fancied.
Yes. Yes.
Which I really liked. I thought that was a funny quote, but it's so true. It's like, I think each generation probably has their version of the fence where they go, these idiots, they put this fence up and how did they not realize we weren't going to be able to drive a truck through here, you know, or whatever. Like, how did they, you know, come up with this decision? Idiots, you know?
Yeah.
We need to remove this, get it out of the way and be done with, you know, their bumbling thoughts or whatever. And of course, you know.
Yeah. So how have you experienced that?
Mm.
That's the part where, as you mentioned, you know, tearing a fence down. How have you experienced the coyotes coming in to get your chickens?
You're putting me on the spot.
Do you
have an answer? I would like to hear your answer.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not saying yeah in the sense, of course, I have an answer, but I think there's I think there's
you put us both on this spot.
Well, no, I'm really I think about it in the sense of because I was thinking about it in law. When he said institutions and laws, and I think there are those dynamics, and it, for me, it's a personal dynamic. I think when we think about what we're culturally experiencing about gender confusion, and that becomes a fence type dynamic for me, because I think when we get sexuality, if I may say so, confused with, you know, a full-on masculinity or what is
yes.
And I think, you know, we're trying to take down these fences. And I'm not saying that parts of fences can't be removed.
Mm-hmm.
You follow? I mean, I, you know, as you were asking me, I'm not necessarily wanting to go completely down just one rabbit trail, but I think of our nation in where immigration is concerned. You follow me? As far as just build a fence, don't build a fence. You know, take the fence, go around the fence. You know, so I'm thinking of this in its current, you know, current, the ability to be current in a present day, I guess, present time. I'm thinking of different fences that I can think about, and I think from my perspective, I am experiencing more and more like gender confusion in younger and younger kids as we've kind of decided to do away with the fence. Follow me? And that's those are the kind of things that are coming to my mind. It's not a desire to necessarily go on a soapbox type thing in this, but that is how I see it as far as, you know, this heightened awareness that we need to do away with, you know, him and her and pronouns, you know, that whole confusion and what that, how that has, you talked about your daughter going to a dance, you know, and I can recognize that, there's certain pressures that go along with each sex, male, female, you know, and I don't want to, I want to be careful.
Right.
Because I think when we throw away male and female in general, our quite often our desire to do so comes from a confusion regarding femininity or masculinity. You follow me?
Yeah, I do.
And I'm not, because I think that's where people, that's where the desire to tear down the fence comes from. Is because, you know.
Well, because we talked about, you know, a lot of this when we talked about gender a few weeks ago. And essentially, there are obviously some, like with every fence, there's inconvenience or, or there's things about it that can be, why is this fence here, right? Like that you look at and go, this is broken. And we shouldn't have it here, or it should be done differently. And, you know, even in gender, we talked about how there are certain ways, you know, toxic masculinity, for instance, that you look at it and you go, yeah, this is broken. Like, and yet to look at it and go, this is broken, therefore we should pull the whole thing out and be done with it.
The you baby, know, that's kind of what baby out with the bathwater type thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that's probably a, another word for Chesterton's fence, right? It's the same idea.
Sure.
Said a little bit differently. But yeah, so I just, we don't want to give away too much of our gender episode either. That's
but it's all good. But still being able to recognize that, and I do think it's an arrogance. That tends to lead to they had it all wrong. If only they knew what I was thinking. And in reality, that is kind of a first order thinking. It's like, you just do this and it's all good. When we don't necessarily, and I think, you know, in a lot of things that plague, you know, our government or our society in some ways, you know, that's kind of a fundamental dynamic. We don't always think about it far enough in advance and recognize the ramifications of what we want to do out of convenience. I think I think of, even for me right now, I think of, you know, gas prices, you know, and it's, this isn't a complaint, but I think about it. It's like, I think about our forefathers and it's like, would they still be paying? Would they be doing something different? You know, cause we went up to $4 and now we're excited when it dropped to 367, you know, because at least we're not paying $4. But in retrospect, months ago we were at $2, but now we're excited to pay $3.67 because it's not $4. And I think about that in a sense of, okay, what are the ramifications of just continuing to, I'm not saying throw it out, but I'm saying I do think about it with this in mind. It's like, okay, what made that drop in price? And I'm happy if the fact that we're looking at the Ukraine and, you know, there was more volatility there or something like that, that led to this uncertainty that created this spike in fuel price, you know, and yet there's also a part of me that's thinking and saying, okay, is this lower fuel price a benefit of, you know, the government using the fuel reserves to basically create this lower price so that people are more satisfied with what's going on. You know, these are the kind of things that go through my mind while I'm filling up my truck at the pump.
Some deep thoughts at the pump.
Just Yes, this is how crazy Mark is. But that's, you know, it's those are the things that I tend to think about.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying other people don't have those same thoughts, but I guess that's my desire in this time is to be able to say, okay, yeah, what am I doing on a daily basis that I am doing out of impulse or just a desire to have change and maybe not necessarily thinking about from its long-term possibilities or implications to a certain degree.
Which is, this ties into the previous conversation we had about changing your minds as well, which is this, you know, my thought too is sometimes you do see a fence, you do think it's worth taking down, you start taking it down, and midway through the removal, recognize, oh, like I said, coyotes are getting through or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And we often have the opportunity to stop what we're doing and change, right? Go the other direction. So I probably should put this back up or whatever. But there's this concept called sunk cost fallacy. Have you heard of that?
I have not.
It's this idea that like once you've already invested a little bit, well, you got to go all the way because there's a sunk cost involved. And so you're already invested. And if you back out the other direction, you're going to lose more than if you continue forward. But the problem is, if you continue forward the wrong direction, you will lose more. But we have this tendency, humans just in general, to go, once you start a thing, you got to finish it. You got to move forward.
Mm.
And again, so using that fence analogy, it's like, well, I already started taking the fence down and it's, you know, half of it's in shambles. So I'm just going to finish taking it down. We'll figure out the coyotes later.
Sure.
Right? And I think that ties into even what you're saying, you know, fuel prices, whatever. Electric vehicles is a good example of like, let's replace the fence with an electric fence. Right? Which is great for a lot of things, but do we know the implications there? Do we understand that? And I also think about fuel prices and, you know, my armchair thoughts, you know, how I see it is that I do think the production of electric vehicles triggered some of those lower prices that we had. Because there's recognition of like, oh, there's an end in sight potentially to this. So we can't charge what we used to, right? And you know, and then obviously things happen or whatever. But of course there's danger there as well in the sense of once we completely shift over, right, to electric vehicles, will all of our waste be gone? Like we will no longer have waste. We will no longer have climate damaging anything, right? If you've read anything, you know there are implications to battery recycling, and, you know, all this stuff. Like, there's a lot of issues on that side as well. Same with, like, you know, wind power, right? Like, you know, that's a good idea. It's harnessing nature's power and turning it into electricity. But then we also know it kills birds, right? Like, a lot of birds, like, more than you would think. And so we're trading one form for another and expecting there to be no second order consequences.
Yeah.
And there are. There are always, because the reason that we do what we do was established through a course of several, you know, iterations, right?
Sure.
And so what we arrived at was the trade-off that we recognize as being the most valuable at the time. Of course, that doesn't mean that won't ever change. And I think that's ridiculous to say a fence should never come down. And I don't think that's what this point is either. It's about understanding why it was there in the first place before you start dismantling, so that when you understand the trade-offs and you're willing to accept them.
Yeah.
You know?
And I'm not sure we always think far enough ahead sometimes to recognize what the trade-offs might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in something, you know, like, as global as what we're talking about, fuel and electric vehicles or whatever. I mean, it's sometimes second order thinking isn't enough. Fifth order, sixth order, like there's implications that are going to occur far into the future by massive reworking of certain systems, which again, I'm not saying they shouldn't be reworked, but I think there's a lot of, and I also think people are obviously thinking through those things. Not everyone.
Well, and that's where I guess as you were talking there, I think about it too. I think there's a difference between the ability to think consequences through, and I also think there's a difference between the ability to promote an agenda.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, sometimes fences can get in the way of an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to take them down, period, mm-hmm. because they're in my way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that's always a healthy way to look at life or global dynamics, even from that perspective.
I actually was thinking about it, you know, the agenda thing, you know, even with the fuel or the electric vehicles mm-hmm. and all that stuff, and how, like, I think this is kind of what you're getting at. Once a decision is made about a direction, it's like, well, we got to put all of our resources into that and enforce that this direction is continued on.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I think that is very problematic for so many reasons.
No doubt.
I also recognize that same thing happening even in small scales that I'm involved in, where I think about at work, for instance, and, you know, several, you know, I have a crew of like 8 of us, and we'll come up with a decision to try and make things more efficient, right? Or better for someone, and we'll decide on a thing. Sometimes it's not my decision, but I enforce it because I'm like, well, this guy is very smart. And, you know, he feels strongly about this. Let's go with this. Let's try it. Mm-hmm. And so I'll find myself trying to enforce this agenda for a period of time. But it's not just because I believe in that agenda.
Sure.
It's because I believe in the cohesiveness of our team. I believe in consistency. I believe in that person having value and trusting that they know what they're talking about. Like, there's so many pieces to, quote unquote, that agenda.
Yeah.
That aren't just the single decision of whether it's the best thing or not.
Sure.
And so the reverse course touches all of those other things, not just the singular subject that we're talking about. Like, oh, yeah, we shouldn't do that because it didn't work out. It's like there's some implications that come with that. Well, now that team member might feel slighted or feel like they, whatever. And I'm not saying, again, you shouldn't reverse course. I think there's all of those things are second order consequences as well of reversing your decision. Now those have to be dealt with and planned.
Sure.
You know, and that's like on a very small scale. And so you think about like when the U.S. decides to put their weight into electric vehicles, all the implications, the relationships that are built, right? The relationships that are strained as a result of this decision, and then talking about reversing course, I think often is that sunk cost thing. It was like, well, I know this is hard, but going back that direction is going to be so much harder to get back to where we are. Reverse course in will make us look like bumbling idiots, and except, you know, it's not that hard to understand how once you get a certain level deep into something, why it would just continue to go that direction.
Yeah.
Which we're, you know, at this point, we're kind of getting away from the original premise of the fence thing, but I think it all ties in, you know.
No, and I think that's where, because they, and even in that article, they mentioned hierarchy, hierarchy in business, and businesses that have, you know, a model to, you know, remove hierarchy or no hierarchy, and, you know, and that the confusion that creates. And I think that's what elicited, you know, how we see confusion in a lot of ways, you know, when there is just this, you do what you want to do as you want to do it type mentality, I guess is where I'm at. And I'm not saying that's everyone. I'm just saying those are the areas that I see where the fence makes a difference. And I think, like you're saying, you can do away with the fence, but at the same time, if you're doing away with it just for the sake of doing away with it, you might reap some, there might be consequences that you're not aware of. And I think to, on your point, I think pride at times keeps us
from
pride wants us to tear down the fence regardless.
And it wants us to be right when the coyotes,
when the coyotes come, it's like, what coyotes? Did we take it down this fence? Create these coyotes? No. This wasn't my... And I think that's where leadership, and we've talked about that before. I don't want to be redundant, but I think that's where good leadership is able to say, okay, I made a mistake here. I trusted the smart guy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And it didn't go well.
Right.
But at the same time, that's not to say that he's not a smart guy still. And at the same time, we need to course correct. And that's where your job is at that point to be able to say, yeah, and you can second guess. But at the same time, I'm seeing these indicators that say this wasn't a good thing. And we can turn back around and we can recognize that, yes, even like you said earlier, you know, maybe the electric car led to some of that. Maybe there was a self-sufficiency factor, you know, as what we produce, you know, we're able to have more control over that. And there's a stability there to where when, you know, world events happen, it doesn't create such a spike.
Right.
You know, because they're, and I'm not saying it's always about self-confidence, but yet I think that it, that does become a part of it to a certain degree. And I think in some ways that's kind of like that second order change. It's like, I can see the benefits of this need for change.
Yeah.
And yes, you may second guess me for a while, but ultimately I'm sensing that, you know, and I'm seeing based on these facts that this wasn't a good choice. And I can step back from that. What was it, the first one you said? When you continue on with something? You know, when you continue on with something, even though it was a bad idea, you had a name
for that. Oh, yeah, yeah. Sunk cost fallacy.
Sunk cost fallacy. Yes.
Yeah.
See, I'm learning from you. But yeah, because I think about that. And I here again, that's not to say that some fences don't need to be removed. Number one, myself, I'm probably too cheap because I don't want to have to rebuild a fence at today's cost.
Yeah, for sure. With wood prices being what they are.
Let's live with that fence for a little while longer, just as it is.
It looks good to me.
But I think there again, that can be, it's like, can we put a gate in the fence?
Yeah.
Can we, you know, I don't think it's always about tearing the entire thing down.
But back to the premise, which it requires second order thinking to go, oh, maybe not tear it down, maybe fence, or maybe leave it, you know, but those decisions really shouldn't be made till you've exhausted what you can know about the current structure. So you mentioned the companies thing, and I wanted to talk, expound on that a little bit. They talked about hierarchy-free companies. It was this idea of, you know, there's kind of a loose hierarchy. And people may have a title like, you know, cat herder, right? Like, it's the
was
joke.
That in the article? I didn't see that.
No,
part.
It's not. But I've seen that role.
Really?
Know, in cute companies, right? Where it's like, we have a hierarchy-free company or whatever. You know, just the idea of like, they're kind of generally supposed to be in charge or whatever, but really, it's they don't want to convey that idea of hierarchy or structure. Wow. They want there to be a feeling of, you know, everyone's smart.
Equal. Everyone's equal.
Smart. Everyone's equal. Everyone can make smart decisions. And, but it kind of, it very much feels like what communism felt like, which is when you look at it on paper and you think about it from this, you know, like everyone's good kind of idea, it looks really good on paper. Like, what if we all just shared and split it evenly? Like, that would be great. Like, the people who are really good at things can help people who aren't, and we'll have this equal system where there'll be benevolence everywhere. No one will be upset at having more or less or whatever. And I think hierarchy-free companies feels the same way, where it's like, it's going to be so great. Everyone will have a sense of authority and ownership in the company, whatever. But the reality, just like communism, is not that. What's on paper, it ends up being completely different. And the reason is because humans are human, right? And so in communism, they're not just going to happily hand over their wages. And if they do, it's going to require a major structural governmental police force to ensure that they will hand it over, right? And so now you're dealing with a huge government side of things that enforces this thing, and no chance that gets corrupt, right? Because we're in this perfect utopia. But no, it doesn't work that way.
Because of the human dynamic.
Human dynamic, right. And so I think communism is another one of those fence breakers. Like, the way we were doing it, whether it was imperialism or democracy, is broken for these various reasons. Which, if you look at any fence, I think, was it Benjamin Franklin who said, if you look at all forms of government, democracy is the worst one except for all the others.
Mm-hmm.
You ever heard that quote?
Yeah.
Which I think is hilarious and true. Because
the fact that there isn't a perfect
one.
Just some
And it's broken in so many ways. You can look at it and go, look at how it's, you know, broken in this way and this way. But yet, it's proven itself, you know, that it's a pretty fine fence. And yeah, it's got some holes and it needs some repair. And sometimes we got to move one end of the post to another spot or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, the hierarchy-free companies, I'm really rabbit trailing.
Okay.
I've been in organizations where that was the ideal.
Hmm.
And I can tell you it's not ideal.
Yeah, okay.
Because no one quite has the authority, so they don't know what they can do.
Hmm.
And so you're left kind of doing mediocre work, because it's like, I think this is what I'm supposed to do. And there's a little bit of fear at risking yourself. And then there will be some people who do risk themselves and go, you know, put themselves out there, whatever, take authority or whatever. And in some cases, they'll benefit from it. Like, they'll be recognized. And there's, you know, some form of hierarchy that kind of still surfaces in that way. And then in some cases, they'll be like, no, that was wrong. You shouldn't have done that. And they'll sink back into, you know, and there's just, and then when, you know, the proverbial crap hits the fan, it's like, well, who's responsible? Well, you usually find out that there's still hierarchy when crap hits the fan. Someone's got to answer for this, right?
Right.
And a good leadership is someone who answers for when the crap hits the fan, and they protect everyone under them from it.
Mm.
And obviously, you know, there's also bad leadership, which is where, you know, management... You look at the hierarchy and it's a bunch of birds on a triangle, right? And the top bird is crapping on the second row and the second row is crapping on the third row. Like, that's the kind of, that's the fence that the hierarchy-free companies are trying to tear down, this bureaucracy, this idea of, you know, everyone's just crapping downwards. And it's like, I got yelled at, so you're going to get yelled at. And I got deadlines, so you're going to have deadlines and, you know, that kind of thing. And of course, that is broken.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just very interesting. But again, I've been in part of organizations where I'd much rather know who my boss is. I'd much rather know who I answer to. I'd much rather know they said this, so I have to do it, whether I like it or not, than to have the freedom to say, well, I can just do the thing I want, but what are the, I don't necessarily know the consequences, the second order consequences of that decision, right? Anyway.
So for you, and I'm thinking about this, is this just comfort from based on the generation you grew up in?
Hierarchy?
Yes.
Very potentially. Yeah, I mean, it's very possible. Like, that's my fence. Is that what you mean?
Well,
like,
no, I'm thinking about it in this. Is it possible? And I'm hearing what some individuals might be thinking in my own mind as I'm listening to you
Let's say that.
And I'm thinking about the individual, possibly a younger individual, that says, well, yeah, that's you're good with hierarchy because that's what you grew up with and you're comfortable with it.
He's pouring some coffee. If you hear that sound.
Yeah, that's good. But either way, I'm...
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at you and saying, okay, here's a late 30-something that's grown up with a positive dynamic of hierarchy.
Hmm.
And I'm saying maybe there's a 25-something out there that's saying, well, that's just because that's what you like and you see it and you haven't seen the benefits of being a cat herder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I shouldn't use cat herd. I don't necessarily see that as a positive analogy. But, you know, this utopian... Because I'm hearing everything you're saying as far as it developing complacency.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is this confusion that goes along. I think that's why in some cases, and here again, I would say, you know, every military movie you watch, you know, that's part of the dynamic, is there is this... You know, we want to take out the leadership because that creates a confusion. But yet there are those leaders that rise up and people will. So I'm just wrestling with that in my own mind as far as that individual. Because I'm wrestling with it in that aspect that I'm comfortable with what you're saying too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet I'm trying to see it from someone's different perspective that sees the value in hierarchy free. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure I'm convincing myself. I'm being honest with you. But at the same time, go ahead. I see the thoughts.
I'm just thinking about as that young 20-something or whatever. Mm. The hierarchy free means, great, I can be recognized for all the passion and fire I have to. Mm. Like, I look at the 39-year-olds and they're kind of leaning back in their chair and I'm raring to go. Like, they're looking at me saying, you're in leadership, but you're not doing what I would do.
Sure.
I have so much more fire and passion to produce amazing things than someone who's been around the block, right?
Sure.
Which I think is true. I think there is this young man's passion.
Sure.
That gets squashed in the current hierarchical system. I think what...
Teachers come to mind when you say it like that.
Okay.
You know, a young teacher fresh out of college, you know, has all of the fire to, you know, in some way, I'm not being sarcastic.
No, but I know.
That fire to change the world.
Yep.
And I'm good. Keep going.
And I'm thinking from my own personal experience as well, like being involved with like church from a young age. There was a time where I was like, I'm on fire. I want to shake things up. I feel like we should do things so differently in church, in a certain environment. And I look like, you know, 15 years removed from that person. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad, I'm looking back and going, I'm so glad he wasn't handed the reins. If that makes sense. Now, things would have been lit on fire, and that would have been, there's sometimes fire's good, right? Like, I'm not, I
Justin's
think
gonna burn the fence down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think there's, I think it would be foolish to ignore the benefits and value in fire and in passion and in youth. Mm-hmm. And so often the current system is broken in that way.
Yes, I hear you.
And I don't know how to solve that. Mm. But I don't think tearing the fence down is the way to solve it.
Yeah.
But I do. It's like one of those things where you recognize that the current system isn't perfect.
Yes.
And there could be improvements. But so how do we engender that, you know, that passion in a safe way that doesn't burn the fence down, but also maybe it blazes a path through it in a particular place where we put a gate in, like you said.
Yeah.
And, so that, I think that's the position my younger self is going, give me room to grow. Like, give me room to make these things that you guys don't have the guts to do. You know, it's like, I think in some cases that's true, you know, but again, that passion can be out of control. That passion can be misguided and it can be missing the second, third order consequence thinking, because you're only looking at the fence and you're angry it's there. It's like, why do you people leave this fence here?
Yeah.
You know? And I think a lot of times that fence becomes more apparent why it exists the longer you're around the fence.
Yeah.
You know?
And I am here again, this isn't about us and the podcast, but I am reflecting on how I see it makes such a difference there.
Yes.
And I can recognize, you know, to a certain degree, that young, passionate person is basically seeing the leadership as being complacent. Yes. And, you know, and maybe that's not the case. Maybe there's some experience here that I'm not necessarily aware of. And yes, the leadership might be able to acknowledge, hey, I appreciate this zeal that you have and I value it. But and at the same time, you can trust me that I'm going to take your input to the degree that I think it's valuable, and I'm going to value you as a person. But at the same time, you know, I think of some individual, you know, so often the person who has been there longer has actually seen or heard that before and experienced how we've tried that right. particular thing and it didn't really work.
Right.
And I think that's where, you know, valuing one another and what we experience, how we see it, who may have seen the benefits of this fence versus the individual that doesn't see a benefit to it, but yet still recognizing there can be places where we put gates in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's the...
Yeah.
Well, a good balance to this article is another one on Farnham Street where he talks about Jeff Bezos, one of his kind of, you know, I guess, guiding thoughts in the way he ran Amazon. Mm. He's the CEO of Amazon. Or was, actually. Mm. He just moved on from that. But obviously he built a pretty ridiculous company. Mm. And one of the guiding principles is this idea of reversible and irreversible decisions. And so when we're talking about the fence, you know, removing a board is reversible. We can say, yeah, let's see what that does. And I think good leadership is able to recognize kind of the difference where the consequences have much further second order consequences, or they're not that significant. So we can just try it. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think to your point about sometimes we say, well, we've done that before and it was broken. And so we're not willing to try new things or whatever.
Sure.
Sometimes the thing is, you know, not the same thing, but we see it as the same. How I see it is, yes, been there, done that. No, thank you. Mm-hmm. How they see it is, no, what you did was, that was a stupid thing. This is way better.
Right.
Right? And so I think at some point we got to talk about good, you know, true leadership, right? Because there's so much of this ties into that. But good leadership is able to recognize, okay, yes, there's potentially differences here. How much impact will this decision make if we try it? And is it reversible? You know? And I think sometimes you can move fast, break things, and put the things right back up, right? Like, the idea of move fast and break things is problematic if the things you're breaking can't be put back up, right? But if they can be, that's where Amazon comes in, right? Like, let's try it, iterate. And if it's reversible, go back, you know? And, like, we can try those things. But it requires strong leadership to recognize we can try things, we can put things back, and not get stuck in the sunk cost fallacy of like, well, we're trying it, so we got to run with it and until, you know, whatever. We'll have to put in the show notes a link to both of those
because
I think they're really good articles. If you don't mind, there's one other quote
I
really like. So, because I know we're
close on time. Yep.
And I know it's going to shut us off, right?
It's good. Exactly.
In the Chesterton's Fence article, they move into the discussion of even addiction. Mm. And so they talk about recovery programs. He basically says, attempting to remove the habit and leave everything else untouched does not eliminate the need and can simply lead to a replacement habit that might be just as harmful or even worse. Because of this, more successful approaches often involve replacing a bad habit with a good, benign, or less harmful one, or dealing with the underlying need.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, man, that is so good. And there's a term in AA called the dry drunk, right? It's this idea that someone is no longer drinking, but every other version of their life is exactly the same. You know, every other part of their life looks exactly the same. Or like, you know, in the case of, you know, you remove one potential salve for the problem, right? Mm-hmm. Like maybe they're smoking weed and you take that away or you know, whatever, and they find something else because that need was not met.
Sure.
And so, I don't know, that's a big reason why, you know, I've always cared so much about Celebrate Recovery because it's like, let's get to the root. Let's not just chop the leaves off and when they come back, chop them again and say, you know, whatever. But let's dive into the dirt and figure out where is this thing starting from. And maybe there's a way to solve that, that deeper need. And I don't know. I really like what they're saying there. Because even a bad habit can be a fence that if you remove it, doesn't, you know, it's, I don't know. So that was really good.
Yeah. No, that is good. Yeah, The old Barney Fife, nip it in the bud.
Nip it in the bud.
Yeah, but go back to the root of where it came from in such a way that says, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like going back to the fence analogy, well, the fence is there because of coyotes. Well, if we could figure out how to control the population of coyotes, maybe the fence wouldn't be necessary, right? Oh, yeah. And so whatever that looks like, maybe they're predators. We did something to remove them and we can bring them back and keep that, get that ecosystem more balanced. And you know what I mean? Like just an example of going back to the root of the problem and figuring out why the fence is there in the first place.
Yeah.
And then you can safely remove the fence because the coyotes aren't handled, right?
Yeah. No. Yeah.
It's good stuff.
It's how we see it.
It's how I see it.
Hey, thank you for listening to our podcast. If you like How I See It, please do all the things that podcasts tell you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us, and or talk nicely about us on social media. If you want to reach out, the email is us@howiseeit.click. Yep, I said dot click, as in dot C-L-I-C-K. Please tell your friends about this show, and we'll see you on the next one.